Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 5th day of December, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Call, and once again, what a week it's been. By the time the week was over, the overwhelming evidence about the most pervasive, blatant, and treasonous election fraud and subsequent cover-up in history continued to literally ooze out of the woodwork. While the waste-stream media continued to prove that they not only can lie with a straight face, they don't even have the common decency to be ashamed about it. By the end of the week, though, the fact that they'd been caught was getting harder and harder to cover up. And some of the worst of the political horrors, at least, were even starting to feel the heat. Let's start there, and then kind of work our way back to fill in some of the gaps. After certifying, for whatever that's worth, as we now know, the fraudulent election in Georgia, in spite of mountains of evidence about the criminality at literally all levels, Georgia Governor Brian Kemp was forced to backtrack a bit on Friday and has now called for a signature audit of the 2020 election after closed-circuit security footage from the election night counting arena, SICK, appears to show a number of Atlanta poll workers engaged in obvious late-night, well, early morning is more like it, ballot fraud. What happened was a Thursday morning bombshell in which an attorney working with the Trump campaign presented CCTV footage of Georgia poll workers waiting for observers and news outlets to leave State Farm Arena in Atlanta, basically be kicked out, after calling an end to counting for the night. Yeah, sure. Oh, and this too, folks, followed the fraudulent water main break that was used as an excuse and turned out to be bogus as all get out. Whereupon they pulled out several large suitcases containing ballots from under a table and got down to the real work of committing treason. The footage, interestingly and arguably embarrassingly, came days after Georgia's head of elections, SICK, Gabriel Sterling, said there was no evidence of fraud in the state recount and encouraged President Trump to accept the results of the election. Yeah, you were cheated fair and square. Comments echoed by the Georgia Secretary of State, scumbag to the max, Ben Raffensperger, who was correctly called an enemy of the people by Trump earlier in the week, and said that Trump obviously lost. The trouble is, they obviously lied and have now been caught. In an interview with Laura Ingraham of Fox News, Governor Kemp has now said, quote, "I called early on for a signature audit, yeah, sure," adding, "I think it should be done, especially, I think, with what we saw today. It raises more questions," unquote. No, it doesn't, folks. It answers a whole hell of a lot of them. Even if the lying scumbag fact-checkers, SICK, at Twitter still label things like the video disputed. Yeah, it's disputed by the people who are now running for the hills because the jig is up. And having been caught and publicly embarrassed, the Georgia Secretary of State's office has now conceded that, quote, "ballots were counted unlawfully and in secret," unquote. So much for their absolutely asinine certification. At this point, one of the few remaining questions when it comes to the skullduggery in Georgia is, will Brian Kemp now be chastened and embarrassed enough to call for a special session of the Georgia legislature to assign that state's 13 electoral college votes to the place where the people of Georgia actually wanted them to go? A lot of those people, by the way, would no doubt want to see a whole lot of Georgia election officials go to Gitmo at this point. And as has become increasingly obvious, they shouldn't be the only ones taking rendition flights. Not even the only governors, as it turns out, and amazingly, I'm even thinking beyond the likes of Michigan's Gretchen Whitmer and the People's Republic of California's own Fuhrer, Gavin Gruesome Newsom. There are other governors, too, that demonstrate what Lord Acton was talking about with respect to power corrupting, and the kind of absolute power we're seeing today corrupting absolutely. The first of them, as it turned out, set the stage over a week ago now, where the governor of Maryland said, "You have no constitutional right to walk around without a mask." Well, hell, you don't have any constitutional rights at all, so far as they're concerned. "Which part don't you understand?" said this guy who put his hand on a Bible and lied. "You wear the mask. There's no constitutional right to walk around without a mask. And hell, for that matter, you don't have a constitutional right to keep and bear arms either, much less be free of illegal search and seizure, or assemble, or petition the government for a redress of grievances. Hell, as far as these guys are concerned, it is a hell on earth, and when we say jump, you had better say how high or else." And that's now been followed up by the governor sick of West Virginia, a fellow with the idiotically ironic name of Jim Justice, who issued Executive Order 77-20, which edict said, beginning at midnight Tuesday, I will issue a mandatory requirement to wear a face covering indoors in all public buildings at all times. This is not just fin. Social distancing cannot be maintained. This is mandatory wearing your face covering in all buildings at all times, other than your home. Unquote. And of course, that's next. He's threatening businesses with closure and citizens, Achtung, with arrest. After all, if we can force you to wear a mask, why can't we just take you off the street when we feel like it too? And then went on to say this, quote, with the avalanche of people across this land that are saying, wear a mask, it's just silly to be in a public building with strangers walking around with no mask on, said Justice. It's silly. What skin off your nose is it? I mean, really and truly, how big a deal is it to just wear a mask when you go into a building? I mean, how hard could it possibly be? Unquote. I want to ask the same question. Why didn't this guy tell us the whole truth and go all the rest of the way? Why didn't he invoke first night privileges while he was at it? Let me suggest the rest of what this attitude is really telegraphing. Hey, what skin is it off of your nose if I want to grope some woman's breast when she comes into a public building? Or take naked pictures of her little son or daughter? Hey, really and truly, just how big of a deal is it to simply let me do what I want to with you? After all, I'm the master, you're the slave, and who the hell gave you the right to think you had any constitutional guarantees anymore? Obviously, it's not the author of Scripture and God of the Bible. They threw him out along with their oaths. Ha! Folks, this kind of tyranny literally ought to have people rising up in the streets. Evil people like this in positions of tyranny were exactly what the Constitution and Bill of Rights were put in place to prevent. No wonder they all think they can lie to your face and commit open fraud, and hey, just what are you going to do about it anyway? After all, we've muzzled you, haven't we? The good news is, at least a few people have a backbone in West Virginia. Justice's order was met with swift backlash, says the National News piece, from both regular citizens and government officials, among which was a group of lawmakers from the West Virginia House of Delegates, with one West Virginia senator, who contended, obviously and correctly, that Just Us is acting and making laws on his own without bothering with the state legislature. Said John Bryan, the attorney representing the lawmakers, quote, the core argument is separation of powers, given that the governor is, quote, creating and enacting his own laws, under which process we don't know, because the people haven't been involved, and then he's carrying out and executing his own law. The West Virginia Constitution says you can't do that, unquote. And hey, folks, you have to ask, with these particularly nasty blankety blanks, just what difference does the Constitution or the Bill of Rights make? It's pretty darned obvious at this point, and it's about time Americans, if we still have any that understand what their forefathers fought and died for, stood up and said the following. The answer to your unlawful tyranny is not just no, it's hell no. They've stolen your children, they've stolen your freedom, they've stolen your businesses, they've stolen your once constitutionally protected God-given rights, they've already stolen the election, they've stolen your right to free speech, and now they're muzzling you, and they're in the process of stealing your guns, so you won't even be able to say no for too much longer. Let me ask it one more time. How big of a deal is it, says this governor, to just plain submit? Answer, better people than you, far better people than you, died for our right to say no to exactly that kind of a demand. On multiple fronts, people are being muzzled. On multiple fronts, the Orwellian big lie is being pushed. And on multiple fronts, people are getting closer and closer to the point of saying, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. Well, folks, on multiple fronts, they're running out of time. Now, at this point, folks, I'd normally be tempted to go back and fill in some of the gaps, some of the big stories from earlier in the week that led us to the place where we are. But the trouble is, we'd be alone in doing that, because the lying waste stream is still contending, in spite of trees falling right and left all over the place, that there's no sound of evidence in the forest, because they refuse to report on it. I hearken back to the famous quote from Jonathan Swift, author of Gulliver's Travels and others, who said centuries ago, I never wonder to see men wicked, but I often wonder to see them not ashamed. Gee, folks, almost sounds like he's been watching CNN's election coverage. All of which leads me, instead, back to an observation I made earlier in the week. The sense that we were waiting for the other shoe to drop, that there was a whole lot of stuff that not only was being lied about or not reported, but perhaps may even be going on behind the scenes for other reasons. If you remember the brouhaha about Sidney Powell and that confrontation with Tucker Carlson, who demanded she show him the evidence, in other words, tip her hand now, rather than waiting for, oh, you know, the Supreme Court, you'll get an idea of at least part of what I'm referring to. I saw a commentary this week where somebody said, do you expect the attorneys for the prosecution to bring the bloody murder knife to the courthouse steps, or do you tell the reporters to wait for it to appear in an evidence bag in front of the judge? Because it turns out that that's really only part of the bigger story here, because like it or not, folks, it's obvious we are literally at war. The enemy is not only foreign, but domestic too, and he, she, and they are already well entrenched behind the gates. And as badly as the waystream media has already been caught lying over and over again, it's important to remember that truth really is the first casualty of war. So I've got to admit, it's not really clear what's going on. About the only thing we know for sure is that all the stuff we're hearing is only a tiny fraction of what's happening behind the scenes and what really matters. For example, here's the key question. Is President Trump planning outright war on the real traitors here who have practically overthrown the United States government from within? Will we finally see the mass arrests that are necessary, certainly beginning by next week at the latest, or not? Is it already too late for a counter-revolution to the communist takeover that so clearly controls the media intelligence complex and, at a minimum, quite a few states? And if things really are as far gone as they appear to be, when you flip on CNN or MSNBC, will the real wake-up call that finally gets most Americans' attention be a nuclear first strike by one side or another? So with that in mind, I'll begin by saying I took all of my notes and the order of stories that I was planning on doing and kind of wadded them up and set them aside, at least for now. And I'm going to begin today by telling you why. I've got headline after headline about testimony and affidavits from eyewitnesses, hundreds of thousands of ballots shipped from New York to Pennsylvania. More fraud than you can imagine, much less read about in the New York Times or WAPO. Democrat operatives in both Michigan and Georgia tampered with military ballots, destroying the old ones and filling out new ones, 100% of them marked for Joe Biden. Certainly not the first time we've heard evidence like that. Election officials in Georgia were filmed destroying evidence. Bill Barr couldn't see evidence of election tampering, even if the future of the republic depended upon it. Oh, but he was misquoted by AP, don't you know? His investigation, such as it is, isn't over, and probably won't conclude until well after the inauguration of his new boss. But either way, it'll never get reported. All right, well, you get the picture. Biggest fraud, biggest build-up to a civil war in American history, and most of the waystream press is still pushing the official narrative and trying to pretend nothing to see here, move along, move along. And all of this, of course, is old news. It's really not news, at least as far as the Ministry of Truth is concerned. So I really want to focus elsewhere today. Let me start, though, with one of the stories that kind of pushed me in that direction. Here's an investing newsletter, and I won't name the source, that has the headline, How Biden's Day One Promises Affect Your Money. You mean like you won't have any or be allowed to own property, but that won't matter because you'll probably starve to death before it becomes obvious why? Or be antifa'd by the Biden-Jungen and put in a COVID camp? No, none of that. Instead, it begins with this asinine statement. President-elect Joe Biden. Say what? Says who? And if you can't see through that whopper, why would I trust investment advice from you? Has made lots of promises starting on day one or early in his presidency, promising to undo many of Trump's tax cuts, boost workers' rights to unionize, ban natural gas leasing on federal lands, blah blah blah. And let me say it as kindly as I can. Who the hell cares? Because, folks, your investment income is going to be the least of your worries if this communist revolution is ever allowed to come to fruition, especially with a whimper rather than a bang. And I'll say it again. For a long time, I've thought that a second civil war in the United States was just about the worst thing that could possibly happen, except for what's happening now and will happen unless we get massive resistance to this takeover, whether it ends up in the form of a civil war or not. So, like many of you, I've been looking behind the scenes, watching the real news, for almost a month now. Tree after tree after tree has crashed down in the forest, and CNN insists there's no sound. And even if there was, we wouldn't let you hear it, much less tweet about it. The U.S. is now like an overheated boiler with a runaway furnace. But CNN, the WAPO, the New York Times, Gulag, and Two Facebook have covered up all the warning gauges. Some of us are watching the rivets pop out. Yeah, time to get out of there. But most of the idiocracy is still sitting around wondering how to drink their Kool-Aid with a muzzle on. So the real test will be whether or not they can cover up the news of the explosion, too. I decided a week or so ago that it had literally been decades since I read George Orwell's dystopian classic and blueprint for what's happening now, 1984. So I decided to reread it. The most important elements I'd remembered, parts I'd forgotten. And no doubt about it, it's amazingly prescient, to the point where some have suggested that the left may have been even using it as an instruction manual rather than a warning. I can't deny that. But if there's anything that strikes me this time around, it's that George Orwell's big brother really isn't nearly as vicious, much less satanically evil, as the real one. But when it comes to the proles pretty much being clueless, he really does seem to have nailed it. So with all of that on the table, this is a place where I intended to launch into at least a brief outline of things that I've thought about, talked privately about for years, but only occasionally addressed on the radio, largely because, outside of scripture and prophecy, you simply can't prove, much less with two witnesses, most of the things that are making the rounds on the rumor net. Are there rendition flights to Gitmo and other places, black sites, currently underway, where evil traitorous operators of the deep state and the election fraud are finally deciding to turn state's evidence rather than risk a firing squad? You've probably seen the stories about the traitorous, evil Gina Haspel. Has she been to Gitmo? Was she injured in a firefight in Frankfurt? Quite frankly, folks, I don't know. And given the truth is the first casualty of war, and they've been lying about Bin Laden too, why will we expect to hear the truth about Gina Haspel? Either way, have there finally been some long-overdue firings and even pardons? You betcha. Am I thankful that Christopher Krebs is gone at the Cybersecurity Protection of the Election Group? Oh, yeah. Talk about a slime dog. I heard some of his interview on 60 Minutes. Almost threw up all over my shoes, and it honestly had me thinking that CBS has finally surpassed even the Communist News Network for their culpability in this cover-up. They've earned their moniker, Communist BS. And somehow or other, the reaction really kind of illustrates the point. Joe DiGenova appeared on the Howie Carr Show Monday and said the following, and I quote, "Anybody who thinks the election went well," he said, "like that idiot Krebs, who used to be the head of cybersecurity, that guy is a Class A moron. He should be drawn and quartered, taken out at dawn, and shot," unquote. And the left simply came unglued. They didn't think it was nearly as funny as some stupid comedian walking around with the president's severed head. Why, it didn't even merit a few guffaws, like killing some Trump supporters in Left Coast cities or whacking MAGA hat wearers over the head with bike locks and a sock. Perhaps, folks, the kinds of things that the media reacts to most violently and the kind of violence that the media ignores most vehemently are the exact things that tell us just how close we really are getting to an open shooting war in America. If, of course, we're paying attention. Retired three-star General Thomas McInerney was again on with Brannon House, and he again seems to be playing lightning rod and telling the American people what really needs to happen. If there really are white hats in the president's inner circle, the military, and the intelligence community, who still take their oath before God to the Republic and the Constitution seriously, and that they're quietly behind the scenes doing the things that must happen if the Republic is to have any chance of survival. No doubt about it as well, the things that Sidney Powell, Lynn Wood, and yes, even Rudy Giuliani are doing, more or less publicly, in spite of the waystream lack of coverage, are also vital, and they're waking up at least a few people to the depth of the depravity and fraud that's been going on for literally years at this point. But let's not kid ourselves about what's really going on here. To use an historic example, the United States didn't take Japan and Nazi Germany to court, at least not until after the war was really over. And then, come to think of it, maybe Joe DiGenova was right after all. What happened after Nuremberg? So what I'm suggesting here, folks, with this relatively long introduction is, yes, we're going to hear story after story after story, whether or not CNN and the WAPO ever decide to talk about it, about election fraud, the likes of which most Americans could never have possibly imagined, and they still won't because they're still being lied to about it. and the vast majority won't ever wake up until the 21st century equivalent of Pearl Harbor. And I think most of us know, like it or not, we seem to be waiting for that. And honestly, folks, either it happens in the next couple of weeks, the next 6 weeks or so at the very outside limit, or Big Brother really does win, and George Orwell turns out to have been pulling his punches. Let's go to the break with an illustration of exactly that that I recorded last weekend. Doublethink from the New York Times and a blithering idiot, and yes, I mean that sincerely, named Pamela Paul.
And this piece of tripe is called I've been wearing masks for months, which right there tells you she's probably not that smart. And still, I have questions. Should masks be stored with the underwear or with the socks? Recently, at a funeral, she begins, I got thinking about the lesser challenges of the mask. No, not the should you or shouldn't you. Oh, that's settled science at this point. Whoa, whoa, time out, full stop. Anytime I hear a blithering idiot say, that's settled science, I know that, well, what? They're a blithering idiot. They're at least ignorant of what science is. Because science is a process of establishing hypotheses, gathering evidence, running experiments, and saying either they support or tend to reject the hypothesis. Anybody tells you settled science, you know that they don't know what that word means, science. When something is, so far as science is concerned, always true, in other words, we've never seen a counterexample yet, it gets called a law. The law of gravity. Newton's second law of thermodynamics. You don't hear it called the law of evolution, for example. You don't even hear it called Einstein's law of relativity. Those are theories. They tend, in some cases, not in the case of the theory of evolution, because there's plenty of things that say, no, it doesn't work. So it's not really even a theory. It's a discredited theory. But this idea of settled science, and the fact that somebody would say wearing a mask is settled science, is the height of idiocy, for reasons I've just pointed out. You don't even have to run an experiment. You can, and you can verify instantly that it causes physical bodily harm. So good grief. And furthermore, if somebody has any knowledge, and this woman obviously doesn't, of mathematics, the relative sizes of the little particles of a virus, or even spittle particles, as compared to the holes in a fabric mask, will tell you it's not stopping anything. It's literally, I like the analogy. Somebody says it's like being stupid enough to think that a wire cyclone fence is going to keep out mosquitoes. It doesn't. And the sizes are actually pretty close. Okay, anyway, she goes on to say, the specific problem is, how do you cry with a mask on? Oh, this is so important to me because I'm an incorrigible weeper. How do you blow your nose discreetly and often enough so that you don't end up with a big wet splotch in the middle of your muzzle? Surely that's a repellent look during a raging pandemic. What a blithering idiot. Okay, how do I lift my mask to do the requisite wiping without someone looking askance at me? Answer, don't hang around with people that are stupid enough to look at you askance for wearing your stupid mask. She didn't get to the question that I wanted her to get to. How do you accessorize for a train ride to the concentration camp? Do you wear a black mask or do you wear something that is accessorized with the orange jumpsuit or whatever they're going to put on you when they get you there and put you into the Zyklon B chambers? Why am I mentioning this idiot? Well, on the back page, there's this line. My husband got creative. He didn't believe that the masks were such a wonderful fashion statement, but he discovered that masks could make a statement. Soon we had an exciting coronavirus wardrobe full of personality. Yeah, every single bit of which says, I'm a blithering idiot, I'm a Kool-Aid drinker, I will do whatever it is Big Brother wants me to do. Thank you, sir, may I have another? I serve the God of this world. I wear it. I take the wrong pill, Neo, and I'm happy about it. Folks, there are people that you might as well not bother talking to because they'll tell you about settled science. They don't know what the word means, and I guarantee you they're not about to care what Scripture says either. So don't waste your time. Wipe the dust off your feet and move on. And by the way, if you're in a place that's full of such people, like New York City, let me say this as kindly and gently as I can. Get the hell out of there as fast as you can. Because it's going to be, well, it already is. It's a literal hell on earth. And they're working hard on it.
And we'll be right back. Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I am again your host, Mark Call. And as I outlined in the first segment, now that we're at war, and truth is one of the major casualties thereof, one of the biggest challenges we face is separating fact from fiction and sorting through the incredible amount of disinformation that's out there. That includes not only the outright lies from the waste stream, but even deliberate disinformation released by the black hats through some of the good guys in an attempt to obfuscate what's going on. And sometimes, folks, it's just the sheer volume of the crap that's out there that might seem daunting. Case in point, and I've resisted doing these stories, as you've probably noticed, for quite a while. Other than some of the obvious tyranny updates, wear your mask or else, and don't even think about reopening your business. But given duh numbers, as bogus as they are, we do need to confront this one today head on. Because even sites like Zero Hedge are starting to cave to some of the numbers hysteria. Okay, well, it's the booga booga flu, but you get the point, and we got a whole heck of a lot of hysteria surrounding it. So let's turn first to the Daily Mail out of the UK with its booga booga headline. US records its highest daily, and they capitalize it, COVID death toll ever. 3,157 people died from virus yesterday. Wrong. 3,157 people may have died with the virus yesterday. And that no doubt includes everything from car wrecks to suicides that might have tested positive, or maybe they don't even have to. Anyway, they say this eclipses the previous record by 20%. Booga, 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 as L.A. plunges into lockdown, CDC warns against Christmas travel, and Biden says 250,000 booga, booga, booga more will die by January. And no doubt quite a few of those folks will be suicides if he and his Communist Chinese Party overlords manage to complete their takeover of the country. But they're just getting the fear train rolling while the virus is surging coast to coast, says their litany of bullet points. Midwest states continue to be among the hardest hit in the country based on cases, and officials said that even a small number of people traveling could lead to an increase of thousands of cases. How about if a whole bunch of people take the bogus tests? That could lead to even more increases in the number of cases. By the way, folks, nowhere in this story do they even mention the concept of false positives. And when it comes to yellow journalism, I went through this piece and asked a few questions. Does the word false appear in the story at all, with or without the word positive? No. How about comorbidity, or morbidity, or even morbidity rates? This story utterly ignores the inflated nature of the numbers that are being floated and flaunted out there. Now, in fairness, there was one picture of some protesters in California where their tyrannical Governor Newsom is adding new stay-at-home orders upon previous destructive unconstitutional lockdown orders. And that has brought out protest. And in one of those pictures, you could see people with signs talking about the false positives. But that was it. And I gotta admit, I'm almost surprised they didn't Photoshop tinfoil hats on some of those people. They did manage to get one with a MAGA hat, though. And none of them were wearing their masks. Down in the story, it even has this ominous foreboding note. Experts, and they always love their experts, said the skyrocketing new cases likely don't yet reflect travel and gatherings, booga, 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 around Thanksgiving. I couldn't help but note that much of the story focuses on tyrant-ruled California, which has seen a huge increase in cases in spite of the tyrannical lockdown and booga, booga, booga mask measures. But they don't really address that point either. There are all kinds of scary graphs in this one. And you know what, folks? As an engineer, I look for the critical indicators, like real mortality rates, not just cases or so-called deaths without any real indications of what they're counting. And also, how does it correlate with things like age and comorbidities? Not a hint in any of these charts that would allow you to pin those numbers down. And the text in the article is equally, and I would suggest, deliberately vague. So the numbers basically, along with the charts, are virtually meaningless. So on to some other stories that might actually help, including some information that I do have from multiple, albeit anecdotal, sources, but still, I would suggest more reliable than the bogus information from the New York Times, WAPO, or Daily Mail, or for that matter, the Centers for Deadly Contamination. The CDC, which now may stand for Coordinating the Destruction of a Country. The anecdotal information includes that from nurses and doctors in a number of locations around the country, basically saying that what they're truly seeing in hospitals suggests strongly that the surge of COVID cases has been overblown, and perhaps overblown dramatically, by the media. In part because the increase in hospitalizations doesn't mean people who are actually sick. In a number of cases, lots of cases, patients were kept overnight for observation. No deaths resulted, and in some cases, not even much in the way of unusual symptoms. But the media reports the massive increase in hospitalizations to make it seem more dire and justify the upcoming and intended and long-planned COVID-1984 lockdown, Part 2. Remember, folks, if the number of hospitalizations and patients increases from, say, 4 or 5 to 30, why, that's a 5 or 600% increase. Oh, booga, booga, booga. And if you're getting paid by the patient to hospitalize them, well, that's a huge increase in revenues, too. But I don't see those numbers being reported. You got a cough and the sniffle? Well, we could certainly use the extra revenue, and it'll help to fill those beds and make the numbers look bigger, too. As we've talked about now literally for months, if you get $10,000 or $20,000 or $39,000 per patient, especially if you can force them onto a ventilator, that's a real motivator for filling up those beds and ringing that cash register. And you know what? In most of those cases, it's not like they were going to be eating out at restaurants or running their business anyway. And as for those in intensive care, well, two important things to remember. One, you're still not hearing much about the very high correlation between ventilators and a death sentence. And two, when it comes to those that are already in intensive care, is it just possible that we're talking about a comorbidity here and that they died of other complications that were pre-existing and, of course, not part of the numbers? If they've already been caught counting motorcycle deaths, multiple gunshot wounds and suicides as COVID deaths, how much more so all the comorbidities that we're simply not even hearing reported anymore? Let me say it again, because the ministries of truth that have a real big agenda here to push, starting with lockdowns and ending with your vaccination, aren't about to make this point clear. There is a huge difference between a death from COVID and a death with COVID, at least assumed to be a death with COVID, because we have these bogus tests that weren't ever intended to be used for this purpose, but do have a huge high false positive rate. Oh, and let's not forget, there are even deaths that are assumed to be COVID, because we just plain don't know, and since we don't have any way of saying otherwise, we'll mark it down in the column that we want to inflate. Note, folks, that you're not hearing much about flu deaths this year at all, are you? What an amazing coincidence there, too. And it's not just about scaring you into submission, either, and coercing you into submitting to tracking programs and almost, but not quite, mandatory vaccinations. They'll be voluntary. As long as you don't care about whether or not you'll ever be allowed to travel, eat, or buy and sell again. No longer Great Britain is, of course, still a step or two ahead. People like Paul Joseph Watson are reporting on the British elite army unit that's been set up to spy and combat what they call anti-vax militants. The Times of London says Britain will literally use military intelligence to seek out and stamp out Achtung, what the Times calls anti-vaccine militants and their related propaganda content. That's pointing out to you that the numbers aren't necessarily what they seem in cyberspace. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that the UK has already agreed to buy more than 350 million doses of vaccines from at least 7 global producers and hopes to start vaccinating people as fast as possible as confirmed cases continue to rise into the booga 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 winter months. Maybe it's that dark winter that the Fuhrer elect has been promising. As the Times put it, the Army has mobilized their elite information warfare unit, renowned for assisting operations against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, you anti-vaxxers, you, to combat online propaganda against vaccines as Britain prepares to deliver its first injections within mere days. And the secretive unit has often worked, they note, side by side with PSYOP, or psychological operations teams. Unless you think that Britain, which really never did have a First Amendment, Second Amendment, or Fourth Amendment, is alone in this Orwellian, Big Brother-inspired boot stamping on a human face forever, Lance D. Johnson has this piece from Natural News about doctors and politicians who are now engaging openly in vicious coercion and referring to people who don't wear masks as, yes, you enemy combatants, you. In July, writes Johnson, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker said those who don't wear a mask in public are the enemy, while citing a positivity rate that was rising from the false positive prone COVID-19 test kits. These tests have been shown to have a false positivity rate as high as 97%, writes Johnson. And arguably, since the Constitution doesn't allow it anyway, they shouldn't be used to suspend civil liberties, and even a Portuguese court has ruled in that direction. So why, they ask, isn't the Illinois governor cracking down on the medical fraud? Answer, we already knew this. It's all about power, and by using the fraud and the numbers, he gets more of it. And who could forget the Capo de Tutte Tyrants? Well, that's a contested title, but no doubt about it. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer has even singled out people there in the legislature who don't wear masks as anti-maskers, declaring that everyone must mask up and submit to her second round of lockdown orders because she, and she alone, is the supreme law of the land. Johnson points out that one of the early fatalities here as the booga 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 lockdown tyranny explodes has been the entire concept of informed consent and a right to opt out of medical procedures that are being enforced on people against their will. And if you understand the results of what happened at Nuremberg, these should be called war crimes. Another honest physician is among those who've come forward and pointed out just exactly how big this particular set of whoppers is. In a translated from the German video, German virologist Dr. Sukharit Bhakti expressed his own deep suspicion about the vaccination development process in place for the booga 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 flu, aka the COVID-1984 or Chinese coronavirus, all of which violate well-established scientific norms. And, says a piece that translated it from Rare Foundation, the doctor makes a number of powerful points which should be considered by those touting the potential vaccine, but won't because somehow or other the profit and power motive seems to overpower that. And besides, when it comes to vaccines, the kind of immunity that really matters is what they have from prosecution and any and all types of liability for any deaths that result from their haste. The former emeritus head of the Institute for Medical Microbiology and Hygiene at the Johannes Gutenberg Universitat in Mainz, Germany, explains that the scientific standard, and they put the word in quotes, for vaccine creation is, quote, 4 to 5 years. And he dismisses the notion that any coronavirus vaccine so hastily developed could possibly be safe. One of the most obvious points is that the vaccine for an illness that has already an incredibly low case fatality rate in Germany probably doesn't merit the attention that's being given it. Quote, among those aged 0 to 70 years, 0 to 70, folks, that's a pretty wide range, 0.7% died with and from COVID. 0.7%, he said, died. But the real scandal is that these numbers are, as we've been talking about, obscured from the public in an apparent effort to make the disease appear more deadly than it actually is. Likewise, the authors look for the mortality rate of the coronavirus in America by age and finds that it's very difficult to find. Quote, you won't be able to find the answer because you'll only get an answer if you search the reports from the RKI, Robert Koch Institute, and calculate the number for yourself. Explaining that the coronavirus is, quote, about as dangerous as an influenza virus, a seasonal moderate flu, Dr. Bhakti goes on to explain that the vast majority of deaths are people who already have compromised health. And as an individual over 70, the doctor explains he himself is still not concerned because he doesn't have comorbidities. Quote, I might be over 70, but I don't have any pre-existing conditions. And if I wanted to, I wouldn't die unless I threw myself down the stairs out of desperation, he said wryly. And of course, we all know that means they would count him as a booga 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 COVID death. He too is on the record pointing out that while the vaccine being developed isn't a conventional or normal vaccination, it's not like the flu vaccine, he says that it is in fact gene-based, and the way it works is, quote, still unknown scientifically and medically. Some of them, folks, are called mRNA or modified RNA vaccines as well. They do something that ought to be a bigger concern than the press is going to tell you about, and that's modify your own DNA. Put simply, once you take it, you can never untake it and get back to the way you were. And he finds it ironic that while many people have fought against genetically modified food, the virologist explains that, quote, we're now talking about a vaccination that genetically manipulates the human body, and apparently these same people have no concerns about that. Well, no, that's not really the case. They just don't have any liability. Thus, they could care less whether they have concerns or not. He went on to explain that all people have lymphocytes, the body's natural defense against viruses, including the flu. It's a basic principle of immunology, he explained. I believe that's always worked, and that's the reason why we as adults are relatively well protected. If you're under 70 and not seriously ill from anything else, the lymphocytes will do their jobs. However, if one uses the vaccine to, quote, inject the gene of the virus, the lymphocytes simply won't recognize that it's only the gene that was injected and not the virus. The result, he explains, will be that the lymphocytes will, quote, go there anyway and kill these cells. That's what we call an autoimmune reaction. Ask about the latest assertion from the far left that there are, quote, increasing numbers of long-term consequences for corona patients. Dr. Bhakti put it this way, it isn't possible to form an opinion because there are no data at all. On Wednesday, Dr. Sukarat Bhakti did appear with Laura Ingraham, Fox News Channel host, on the Ingraham angle, and was perhaps even a bit more blunt, saying that the looming COVID-19 vaccine is, quote, downright dangerous and will send you, quote, to your doom. Speaking on a Skype video link from his home in Germany and in English, he said a number of things that aren't getting the attention they should. Ask about social distancing and the infamous muzzle for the mindless masses, a.k.a. the mask. He was asked, which of those two in your research and your work has been the most displaced? To which he answered, both. Both, she said, not backed up by science. Responded Dr. Bhakti, zero science. Asked then why these methods, including masks and socialist distancing, are being pushed, he elaborated thusly. There's something that we, and when I say we, hundreds of thousands of people are standing up to say, please, all of you sit down and think about this, read about this, and make up your own mind. Don't believe things that people are telling you. Think for yourself and come to your own conclusions. That, said Dr. Bhakti, is why we wrote this book, referring to the massive bestseller in Germany, translated into English, called Corona False Alarm. Anyway, he said, that's why he and his co-author, wrote this book, because all the arguments saying, telling you why what you're doing, is absolute nonsense. Peter Barry Chowka, summarizing the interview for the American Thinker, also couldn't help pointing out that he used the same terminology, utter nonsense, to describe some comments Wednesday from America's own evil Dr. Mengele, Tony Fauci, and his claim earlier on Wednesday during a live interview on The Story, same network, that 75% of Americans would need to take the poke against COVID-1984 in order to achieve the vaunted herd immunity, prompting Bhakti to add, someone who says this has not the slightest inkling of the basics of immunology, leading her to the final question. Do you think, then, that the COVID-19 vaccine is unnecessary? To which Dr. Bhakti replied, I think it's downright dangerous, and I warn you, if you go along these lines, you are going to your doom. Unquote. Well, though, you do have to hand it to the deep state and the New World Order. They're consistent. Whether it's election fraud, the booga 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 flu, or the Great Reset, ultimately it's all about your doom. And with all of that in mind, I guess I would be remiss today if I didn't talk at least a bit about what the president himself called probably the most important speech he had ever made. And for that reason, it was clearly and almost completely ignored and even denied by most of the waystream ministries of truth. I downloaded it last night since I was worried that I might not even be able to find it online come this morning. The Daily Mail, at least, unlike most of the major U.S. networks, SICK, did actually include the video of the speech in their article about it. They also noted he posted it on two Facebook and Twitter, whereupon both sites flagged it as false information, claiming Biden won. At least they didn't say President-elect Biden won in that summary. They wrote correctly in their bullet subheadings that he predicted what he was saying will be, quote, demeaned and disparaged, and he did call the election what it was, a total catastrophe, saying he didn't want a revote, but instead to overturn the election immediately and urge the Supreme Court to intervene. What I thought was interesting, call it a wry admission way after the fact, although the Daily Mail kept saying over and over again, they quoted the Attorney General William Barr, who said there was not enough evidence of fraud to overturn the result, and a raft of judges have not accepted Trump's claims, they couldn't keep parroting the old assertion that he didn't provide any evidence. He spent almost 3/4 of an hour doing precisely that. And as one analyst put it, hey, you don't see the prosecutor bringing the bloody knife to the press conference on the courthouse steps following the arraignment, and no one with any intelligence, anyway, expects any of that outside of the appropriate court. And for that reason alone, folks, I would encourage you, download it while you still can, and take a look at it. Because most of what you will hear there, you're certainly not going to hear from the three-letter fake news agencies. And he did a pretty good job, which is why I'm not going to try to summarize the whole thing in just a few minutes. Because there is, indeed, at least 3/4 of an hour worth of evidence in there. I will, though, point to at least a few of the highlights, including the way he started out.
Thank you. This may be the most important speech I've ever made. I want to provide an update on our ongoing efforts to expose the tremendous voter fraud and irregularities which took place during the ridiculously long November 3rd elections. We used to have what was called Election Day. Now we have election days, weeks, and months, and lots of bad things happened during this ridiculous period of time, especially when you have to prove almost nothing to exercise our greatest privilege, the right to vote.
Whereupon he launched immediately into a theme that I don't think should be overlooked, like the press basically did with the whole speech. Your host certainly thinks, and I know I'm not alone in hoping this is precisely what he meant, that he is not going to allow this attack on the Republic, literally an act of war, to go unanswered.
As president, I have no higher duty than to defend the laws and the Constitution of the United States. That is why I am determined to protect our election system, which is now under coordinated assault and siege. For months leading up to the presidential election, we were warned that we should not declare a premature victory. We were told repeatedly that it would take weeks, if not months, to determine the winner, to count the absentee ballots, and to verify the results.
And yet, folks, and maybe the president was too polite to put it this way, the Waystream Press declared senile Biden the winner before the ink was even dry on the masses of newly printed ballots.
My opponent was told to stay away from the election. Don't campaign. We don't need you. We've got it. This election is done. In fact, they were acting like they already knew what the outcome was going to be. They had it covered, and perhaps they did, very sadly for our country. It was all very, very strange. Within days after the election, we witnessed an orchestrated effort to anoint a winner, even while many key states were still being counted. The constitutional process must be allowed to continue. We are going to defend the honesty of the vote by ensuring that every legal ballot is counted and that no illegal ballot is counted.
He goes on, of course, to provide in some detail what his many detractors and those who would like to continue the purge, the coup, and the Bolshevik Revolution here have denied was even possible. Outline reams of evidence from affidavits to statistical fraud to algorithmic manipulation of an election that was stolen that represents an act of war against these United States. And when I was searching for the video last night, it was some of the comments that were on the links when I finally found it that really caught my attention. More than a few people said the very fact that the mainstream press, as they called it, is completely ignoring this speech is probably the scariest thing about this whole election fraud and massive following cover-up. When the President of the United States isn't even allowed to address the nation, you know that the coup is at least well underway and that things are coming to a head very quickly.